Welcome to the REI Rookies Podcast.
Real Estate Investing Rookies Podcast, episode number 5, where we invite you to follow us on our journey towards financial freedom using the power of real estate. I'm Josh Koth.
And I'm Jack Haas.
All right. Well, welcome back to REI Rookies. So like this podcast, so everyone knows, is a kind of following a couple of real estate rookies, some noobs, as they say, on our journey, learning real estate and just digging deep into it. So we figure you can learn right along with us, and we would love to have some information like this when we were getting started. So we figure it can't hurt to pass it along. Right, Jack?
Yep, that's right. And we have a lot to cover today, don't we, Josh?
Yep. So basically, we're talking about our four main strategies, our exit strategies, because once you purchase a property, you should really have in mind how you're going to get out from under it, or, you know, sell it, or hold on to it, or what your exit strategy is. What's the purpose? What purpose will that property serve in your portfolio? And we have four main strategies: wholesaling, quick flipping, fix and flipping, and buying and holding. So last week we talked about wholesaling, and this week we're going to talk about the quick flip. So basically, what is a quick flip?
Well, quick flip is something that we can just, we buy at a discount, and we really don't do much to it, if anything, and we put it back on the retail market.
Yeah, so basically, you know, the quick flip and the fix and flip are fairly similar. The main difference being we don't do a lot of extensive rehab to the quick flip. It may be as small as just having it cleaned. It may be, you know, a couple, you know, putting up some blinds or just a couple of minor little things, but basically inconsequential, nothing that would rise to the level of calling it a fix and flip or a rehab. So, you know, that seems weird. Well, why wouldn't everybody just do that, right? How could you possibly buy something and then put it right back in the retail market? Well, one of the ways, you know, the main way that we stumbled upon this strategy was, well, we stumbled upon it because we, when you purchase things at a deep enough discount, then that does become an option. And we stumbled upon it because we were, you know, having some trouble getting a couple properties rented, and we needed to have some cash flow coming in. We were kind of, you know, we had bought a few things all in a row, had trouble renting out. Some was middle of winter. And we thought, well, there's enough equity in all of these properties. If we put them on the MLS and one of them sells for what we're asking, we'd be happy because that would be a significant enough profit based on the equity we had in it. So we listed a couple, and lo and behold, they both sold. So we kind of stumbled upon that strategy, and we realized, wow, this is a way to make some pretty quick profits without a lot of effort. Basically, you're just timing the market, right?
Yeah, and in one case in particular, the only thing we really did to it was a contingency on bracing the basement. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to get a major part of that rehab that was needed done without any money out of our pocket.
Yeah, it was actually done by the seller when we purchased it. So then we were able to, you know, take advantage of the value that they added by placing it back on the market. And, you know, honestly, this is really a matter of timing. You know, like in the stock market, it's timing the market, right? Buy low, sell high. I mean, that's kind of exactly what this is. But, you know, our strategy is always to buy so cheap that, you know, it's not really an issue of timing. It's that, you know, we could turn around and sell any of our properties that we purchase because we get them so cheap. The equity's built into the deal. So it's pretty easy to just put any one of the ones that we purchase back on the market if we had to, or if we need some cash, or things are, you know, because holding costs come into play, carrying costs. You can't have a property sitting vacant. If it's, you know, if you don't have a tenant in there, you're having trouble getting a tenant, and you're holding it, waiting for a tenant, you know, the worst thing that a property can do is sit there and not earn anything. It's fine if you're in the middle of a rehab, you know, that you take that into account. So the quick flip is just a way to, you know, generate some cash and then move that into an asset that's going to be performing. Because that's something you have to constantly do, is analyze, your portfolio and see which properties are performing to the level you expect and which ones aren't. And honestly, you don't know until you get into it how a property is going to perform. And, you know, some will go, you know, will vary. So, you know, if one is not performing and you have enough equity where you can do a quick flip without doing a bunch of rehab and get your equity out and put that into a performing property, then why wouldn't you, right?
Yeah, that's right. And especially with, you mentioned about the timing. We actually happened to buy the one in particular going into winter, during the winter months. So we had a motivated seller on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a depressed market during the winter months in Fargo, North Dakota. Nobody wants to move in January.
Right.
So then we took advantage of the spring market. So mm-hmm. it is all about timing in this regard.
Yep. And also when you're out, you know, when it's 10 below and you're out looking at properties, there's not a lot of competition there on the buying side. So, you know, there's a higher chance that your offer will at least get consideration, if not necessarily accepted, but at least get considered. Whereas I've noticed right now when we try the same techniques, or a lot of our purchasing, you know, our offers are getting discarded a little more quickly right now because there's a ton more buyers out. And we're speaking just MLS properties here. Obviously, off-market properties, you know, the same lack of competition exists. But if we're speaking about properties on the MLS, you know, you can really limit that competition during the winter. So, you know, we always try to be on the lookout in November, December, January, around this area of the country, because you can really find some good deals. And then if you can wait it out to until spring, then you can capitalize on those returns and cash out.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to keep an eye on that number. If you know your carrying cost is going to be those 3 months, you better calculate that in and try to make sure that's part of the discount when you're purchasing that property, because like we said, nobody wants to move in January, February in Fargo, North Dakota. So we have to take into account that it's likely going to be vacant for those 3 months, 4 months out of that year.
Yep, exactly. And but if you have enough equity built into the deal, where let's say it costs you $600 to $800 a month to hold a property between taxes and insurance, whatever your debt service is, and any utilities you have to pay. You know, if it costs you a couple grand, but you can make a significant amount more than that, then, you know, it's all just part of the calculations. And as long as the numbers still work, then that's great. And, you know, another reason you could use a quick flip is, let's say a property, you know, just doesn't turn out to be what you thought it was going to be, and it's tougher to rent, or maybe it doesn't work as a rehab. it's another, you know, kind of a escape hatch. You can use it to extract your equity, even if you don't necessarily make profit, but it's a way that you can at least get the money you put into the deal back. And if you get away clean, sometimes that's still a win, right?
Yeah. And we've had a couple situations where we've had to think about just breaking free clean. But I think another lesson that we learned on the one property in particular is that a good source of leads on the MLS is watching those properties. We get, I don't know, I suppose it may vary depending on the market, but in our market, we are able to basically subscribe to properties within a price range, and we get a notice on a regular basis via email when a property hits that the market, the retail market. Well, in this particular scenario, the seller, their first deal fell through.
Yep, we saw it pop back up.
So in doing so, we were able to garner the information from the what caused the deal to fall through. In this case, it was the basement needing bracing. And then we were able to use that information to make that a contingency on our purchase.
And also realize that it was a good time to pounce, and that the seller may be in a weaker position having to put the property back on the market. So when you are constantly monitoring the MLS, you can see when properties re-enter the market, and that might be a perfect time to strike. Because if, you know, being on the selling side, I've experienced this as well. And we have, Jack, when a deal falls through that you think you have a property sold, that definitely softens you up some, right?
Oh yeah, it definitely does. And thankfully, I think we're going to get into another strategy down the road here, but it kind of gave birth to a new exit for us.
Yep. And that's another really important point, is always be willing to pivot, to adapt, to constantly be evaluating the market around you, the conditions, and just be ready to, you know, like I said, pivot and switch your strategies up as needed, because you can never predict how things are going to be, you know, a few months down the road. So, you know, this strategy, this quick flip strategy, just like all the others, really depends on one thing that they all depend on, which is you got to buy it cheap, right?
Yeah, you got to stick to those numbers. Once you figure out your calculations, we don't want to get into a bidding war, and we really want to focus on our return.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, in purchasing our properties at a discount, you know, we use what we like to call the brute force attack, and we may have spoken about this previously, but just to summarize what that is quickly is, you know, we will look at every property in a certain price range that fits our criteria, and we'll go look at it. We'll do a quick evaluation of what it would take to get it rentable or livable or sellable, and then we'll make an offer, you know, with a deep discount programmed into the offer. And we just have our agent write that up, even if it seems incredibly ludicrous, and we just submit as many of those as we can. And that's, you know, one of the ways that you can get properties, even on the MLS, when there's a lot of competition. You know, it's a numbers game. You might have to look at 50 and write 30 offers to get one deal. But that's how we've acquired a few off the MLS.
Yeah, in fact, we've gone as far as doing Brute Force Friday, where we kind of set aside a day and make sure that we go back through, evaluate the properties we have seen, and make sure that we have submitted those offers where need be. We don't want to miss anything.
Yep. And then another thing is you got to be ready to pounce. I've texted our agent many times, you know, late at night when I see an auto email pop up of a property back on the market or a price reduction, something similar to that. And I'll text him. I'll say, I want to look at that in the morning, or let's submit an offer right away. You know, just sometimes speed is of the essence. And, you know, you experience this when you're on the selling side of things. When you get an offer quickly, the sooner an offer comes in, you know, the better. Because you don't want to have to be, you know, if you're the first one to submit an offer, that says something. You know, being on the selling side, you get excited about offers coming in. So I think it's really important to get those submitted as quickly as you can.
So let's go to our next topic. We have our business tip of the week.
Yes. Yeah, so basically, our REI specific lesson of the week is create a spec sheet for rehabs. Jack, you elaborate on this one.
Yeah, we've definitely found this really being helpful, and to make sure everybody's on the same page. We're creating a spec sheet for all of our rehabs that would include the specific gray color that we paint our walls, what color we paint our trim, what kind of flooring we use in the kitchen, what kind of flooring, carpeting we might use in the bedrooms. And then we don't really deviate from that list. We're always looking for a hunt if something becomes available and it might be a little cheaper, but we want a specific result. And in doing so, then we can hand over that spec sheet to our flooring guy or to our painters or whatever, and we can make sure that we are consistent regarding those repairs or those updates.
Yep. And then also it allows you to store any excess. Like if you buy 5 gallon buckets of paint, if you use the same wall color everywhere or the same trim color, well, then you don't have to keep buying new, you know, pails of that and throwing away the excess. You can just store it and use it on the next project. If you use the same outlets, you know, you can buy them in contractor packs of 10, the same switch plates, things like that. So once you kind of decide on some colors, that's a really smart way to go. And then also it allows you to more accurately determine your costs too, because you know okay, for a square, you know, a kitchen size of a certain amount of square feet, it costs you so many dollars per square foot for the flooring. And you can, you know, extrapolate that to the wall size. So you can really hit your rehab numbers a little, you can forecast those a little bit more accurately. So yeah, that's our REI specific lesson of the week. Create a spec sheet for your rehabs. Figure out your materials in advance as much as you can. All right, so the next thing is the Coach's Corner, a personal development tip, book, or quote. So, Jack, I figured you could talk about a book you read recently.
Yeah, and it's a fairly popular book. It's called The Traveler's Gift.
And you were actually sending me quotes from this when you were traveling, ironically, traveling.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it had an impact. So why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, we previously talked about the influence that Rich Dad Poor Dad had on both of us. But I guess lately we've been a little bit more receptive to some of this information. There's been a lot of things that I would in the past consider corny, or why would we do that? You know, like a dream board and goal sheets that we post by our bathroom mirror and what have you. But the Traveler's Gift is basically a revisioning of Seven Habits, Highly Effective People, or something like that. But it basically teaches those lessons in parable type form. And I don't want you to think that this is some sort of spiritual movement of any kind, but it does have a sci-fi nature, if you will, as a time traveler is visiting these different historical figures and is getting a lesson from each one.
So what do they call, is that called a fable or a parable? Like you said, where there's a, you know, a story or a message embedded within the plot.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's a way to get across the point dramatically, I guess. And yeah, I agree with you. You know, we're very logical, data-driven people. So we tend to be resistant to these, you know, more virtual and spiritual and, you know, or we call them hooey kind of, you know, things like vision boards and things like that. And I agree. You know, it's tough to get into that as a data-driven, logical brain person, but it all goes back to that mindset, right? Like, you have to have the mindset that you're going to succeed. And so any way you can prepare yourself and, you know, get your mind right, you know, I've sort of surrendered to it and I'm willing to try just about anything, right?
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm coming at, too. This book kind of hit a little close to home on a couple things. It starts off with a 45-year-old father who gets in a car accident and starts to wonder what he's going to do. He gets let go from his career, his longstanding career, and now he's trying to cope.
You're right in the target demo there, huh, Jack?
Yeah, a little bit. We shared in the previous, I think, episode two with Josh's story. And so some of that information kind of struck the chord at the right time for me. I guess it's all about that timing again.
Mm-hmm. And just being receptive and ready to receive the message, as they say.
Exactly.
All right. Well, check out The Traveler's Gift. We'll have the links in the show notes to that audio. Did you read it physically or did you listen to the audiobook?
I actually did a little bit of both.
Okay.
It was my first experience with the whole Amazon Kindle audiobook thing. So I had the digital print and the audiobook, and I was switching between the two.
Now, does it really track where you're at so you can switch back and forth seamlessly?
Yeah. Yeah. When I launched the Kindle app, it detected where I had left off in the audiobook.
That's pretty slick, I got to say.
Yeah, that worked pretty well.
Excellent. All right. Well, that wraps it up for Coach's Corner. Check out The Traveler's Gift and make sure you join us on Twitter at REI Rookies. And remember to get off the bench
and get into the game.
We'll see you next time. Well, no bloopers.